The PSAL basketball tournament is rich in tradition. It began in 1903. Flushing High School won the first championship. It was held at Madison Square Garden No. 1 on Madison Avenue and 26th Street. Tonight, the tradition continues as two teams from Brooklyn collide for the bragging rights of the New York metropolitan area.
Sean Pratt is in for the rail splitters, replacing Darryl Flicking. And the basket put up and in by Sean Pratt. Pratt is a 6'2 senior, averages 5 points off the bench. Outside to Sean Pratt.
The Pratt's been very effective putting off the bench for Lincoln.
And it is over. And the Lincoln faithful storm the court at Madison Square Garden. The rail splitters of Lincoln have won the PSAL A Division Championship for the third time in the school's history. Sean Pratt for Lincoln.
What's up, everybody? Not My House is in the house. This is your host, Eric, and as always, right next to me is my co-host, Zach. Zach, what's going on this morning, my friend?
I'm pumped. It's always a good time when we get somebody representing Coney Island on the pod. I mean, we had Zach Marbury not long ago, and now we got another, so it's going to be a fun one today. I'm pumped.
Absolutely. He's a Lincoln High School alumni who was on that 1991 city championship team. He played his college ball at Fulton Montgomery and also at the former Southern Vermont College. He played semi-pro ball and was also a coach. Excited to have him on the show today. Mr. Sean Pratt, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing well. Thank you guys for having me on, man. This is real exciting to be able to come on here and talk to you guys. Like I said, y'all probably got one of the best podcasts out there. So thank you. I appreciate you having me on here, man.
I appreciate those kind words for sure. We'd like to get to know a little bit about our guests, about the background before we start talking hoops. You're a Coney Island guy. You know, growing up in Coney Island's a big deal, you know, especially like the city, you know, New York City, Coney Island, Lincoln High basketball. Can you give us a little idea of what it was like growing up out there?
Oh, man. It was, you know, Coney Island is one of the toughest sections in Brooklyn where, you know, it was a lot of hardships. You know, a lot of families, including mine, didn't know where their meal was coming from day to day. You know, there's a lot of good people in Coney Island, but, you know, Coney Island was basically a place where it was a lot of crime, a lot of drugs, a lot of racism. You know, it was hard growing up, but again, I wouldn't change it for the world because of the people that, you know, I was able to grow up around, such as the Marberries, you know, the Morton family, you know, Coach Hartstein, my high school coach, who played a big part in our lives, another coach by the name of David Reed. We call his nickname was Disco. He spent a lot of time with us. You know, we had to basically, you know, skirt a lot of bad stuff that was going on in the neighborhood. And basketball was one of those things that kept us out of trouble, kept us in a place where we stayed interested and didn't fall to the pressures of the streets of selling drugs and things of that nature. You know, I can go back to when I was a young kid, like a baby, man. And, you know, my older brother, his name is Mitchell, you know, in the streets, they call him Finesse. He hung out with a lot of the guys in the neighborhood. I don't know if you guys know Silk Owens, Carlton Owens, who played at the University of Rhode Island. He's from Coney Island.
Yeah.
All those guys were my brother's friends. And they all played basketball. They had it was a clique called the Leave Alone Crew in Coney Island. It was a group of guys, older guys, that basically, I wouldn't say they were all friends, and they did different things. Like they played they had a basketball team, but basically, these guys kept us safe around the neighborhood, made sure that we wasn't in a lot of trouble, made sure that we knew the surroundings of everything. The one thing I can tell you, they never forced us or never wanted us to be into that street life. They always wanted us to be able to play basketball safe, be safe, and help us get to those levels of college. And they basically wanted the best for us. So they kind of shielded us, these guys. And the one, there was a few people, like I said, my brother, Carlton Owens was a guy that I really looked up to coming up. Of course, the Marberries and Coney Island, because they're the biggest. When it comes to basketball, they're one of the biggest families in Coney Island. I would say that family is basically the number one basketball family in Coney Island, because, like I said, they had the connections, they had the a lot of their brothers, a lot of those guys, they had talent. I'll tell you a story about Stephon, like what he did to me one day in the park, which was kind of funny. But
this should be good. Can't wait for this one.
but I grew up with these guys, and they basically wanted to make sure that we had a safe haven and a safe place. They made sure that they protected us, the younger guys coming up. So, but like I said, some of the guys, like, Eric Marberry, who was way older than me, and I was a young kid. There's Eric, there's Don, and Eric's nickname was Sky Dog, I believe. No. His name was, I forgot what they called him. I think it was Sky Dog, and Donnie Marberry was Sky Pup. So, yeah, man, these guys had nicknames. I can remember, now I didn't see them play, but I can remember the stories of how they came in and dropped 50 and then just walked out the gym. You know what I mean? I mean, these guys put up numbers, and these guys were serious when they got on the basketball court. It was almost like, you was trying to steal something from them, and they wasn't going to have that. Right. But those are the guys that I really looked up to. And like I said, there's a lot more other guys, but mainly, and the Morton family, the Tiny Morton, Kwame Morton, those guys helped me a lot also with the game of basketball. Like I said, those families are the two families in Coney Island that you would say, yeah, this is how basketball is. Everybody would basically hang out with those guys. I remember hanging out with Tiny and going with him, because I knew he was the only one that knew where the good runs were.
Right.
So I stayed with him, and traveled the city with him and his cousin Kwame. Kwame was one of the greatest shooters in Coney Island, greatest 3-point shooters.
Yeah, and I mean that's the beautiful thing about New York City, is that there's always a court to play at. I mean, New York City's like very famous for the playground basketball, and I have to ask, there's always good run there. You've got to have some great stories about playing at the Rucker or some of the other courts. Like, what was the playground scene like for you? And what are some of your favorite memories playing on the playgrounds? Like, are there some guys that come to mind where you're just like, damn, this guy's different?
Listen, in the courts in Coney Island, man, you have to come with your game. There's no lie. I mean, you could be sitting there for hours waiting for a next, right?
Oh, yeah.
And not that, if you're not tough enough, somebody gonna take your next and push you out. So this was a time in New York around in the 90s, right? But this is when basketball was at its highest peak. I mean, you had guys like Derek Phelps, Christ the King High School. You had, Brooklyn Tech with Conrad McCray. And the city was tough. You couldn't just walk in any park and just start playing. But I can tell you, we had battles on that basketball court, Norman Marberry, Kwame Morton, Michael Spencer, Daryl Mims, Daryl Flicking. These guys were tough basketball players, and you really had to bring your game on that basketball court. My thing was, what I wanted to do was I wanted to impress my older generation guys, Carlton Owens, Bernard Mitchell, 2 Cent, Robert Williams, who played a big part in my life. The nickname was Booby. Glenn Poole Harding, who has the Basketball Heads podcast. That's really real strong right now.
Great podcast, by the way.
Say that again. Sorry.
It's a great podcast, by the way. I've heard Basketball Heads. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I was listening to it the other day. He's got amazing people on there, but Glenn Poole Harding is one of those guys that we all looked up to also. Like I said, I was a young kid coming up, but watching them play on the playground was like war. It was like literal war. You know, guys wasn't going to just let down easy. We would have, how you go the game tied up and then you got to go two more points.
Yeah.
I mean, guys was getting fouled, chopped. I mean, you was not going to win a game easy. You know, you had to really, how can I say, you had to really fight to get that win. And everybody in Coney Island was like that, especially on the playground in the basketball court called The Garden, which is right next to my building, you know. You know, in the movie He Got Game, they show the garden by Coney Island houses. You know, that wasn't the original garden. The original garden was in Old Dwyer Projects, right next to Building 5 in Coney Island. And everybody came down there to play on that court. Now, you got to remember, way back when, Coney Island is all made up of projects. It still is, right? Now, this is what I'm going to tell you. You couldn't just go down to these projects a lot of times. You know what I'm saying? It became that way late in the 90s. But in the early 80s, and mid 80s and late 80s, a lot of us couldn't just, I wouldn't say it's like Los Angeles where you can't go to block like the Crips and Bloods, but there was just some projects that were notorious, right? Like 23rd Street, Cary Gardens, you know, that's where Derek D. Flight Brown lived. That's where Mo Brown, who played at St. John's, lived. J.J. Johnny Jackson also lived down at 23rd Street. All of those guys down in that area, you know, way back in the day, we wasn't able to go down there because there was so much violence going on in Coney Island. Remember, when you're talking about basketball, you also got to talk about the political, economic, and social positioning that we were in back then also, right? It was a lot of crack, a lot of people selling crack. It was a lot of drugs. And we had to navigate all of that, right? While we're playing basketball on the basketball court, right? I mean, literally, it could be a shootout. And we hear them shots ring out, we out, we dart, we gone, right?
Right.
And, you know, and then a little bit later, we'll come back, right? Now, most people, that's trauma. You wouldn't come back to that. You know what I'm saying? But for the most part, basketball in Coney Island was competitive. It was no nonsense. It was, you had to protect yourself on that basketball court and protect your game and protect your spot in that, while you was playing. If not, they were gonna run over you, man. So, you know, and that's what built that tough exterior through Lincoln for all these years. I'm still trying to learn the history of Lincoln basketball, but all of those guys that I just told you about, and there's a whole lot more, those guys made it to what it was back in the day. I listened to on Basketball Heads, Carlton Owens said, you know, back in the 80s, I want to say like early 80s, Lincoln didn't have no respect. And I was like, what? Of course, I didn't realize that because I came in 88. 88, 89 was my first year. By that time, we had all the respect, right? Because they had won the city championship in 86.
Yeah.
You know? And let me tell you how good Coney Island is. Again, this is not to take away from anyone. In the 1986 championship team, there were no Marberries. And in the 1991 championship team, there were no Marberries. Those are the only two times that we won a championship before Tiny got the job, the Lincoln job, and then ripped off like what? 10 or 12 in a row straight, something like that. and became a powerhouse after that. So
it's interesting you mentioned that about the Marberries. I got to ask because, I mean, obviously you're on that 91 team. And, I mean, can you kind of walk us through your high school career? I know that there are guys like Mashburn and Terry DeHare, Roderick Rhodes, Dan Hurley during your time. And, I mean, I saw Marbury sitting behind your bench in that video you sent me. But what kind of player were you? And who were some of the other guys that you faced during your time? Because that was a special time.
In my junior year, we faced Jamal Mashburn. I can remember this was in my sophomore year because I did ninth grade in junior high school. Because in back then, you did seventh, eighth, and ninth in middle school. And then I went to high school in my 10th. I didn't have a freshman year at my high school. I did it in middle school. So when I got to Lincoln, I got there in 88, 89. That was my sophomore season. On that team, we had the likes of Michael Spencer, Norman Marbury, Daryl Mims, Tyrone Parker, who played football at Stanford. That year, we went to the city championship game, and we lost to Adlai Stevenson, who had Anthony Pell, David Kane. I don't know if you remember David Kane. He played at Stevenson. He played at St. John's. Michael Huger, who played at Bowling Green University. And did I say Anthony Pell?
Pell. I remember that name for sure.
Yeah, Anthony Pell played at Villanova, as you know. Well, they beat us in that 1989 game. And we played that game in the Felt Forum. So my sophomore year, I didn't get a lot of burn. I was rubbing that pine like it was no tomorrow. But during that time, I got to learn how to play real basketball. Because by the time I got into high school, again, I was just playing street ball. I didn't understand plays and all those other things until Coach Harstein got us all into that playing. So, like I said, some of the guys I played against, like I said, was, you know, like I said, Mashburn, we played in the King Classic. Who else we played? We played, that year we also went out to Vegas and we played George Raveling's high school team, who at that time had Harold Miner.
Baby Jordan.
I believe, yeah, Harold Miner. We played against, I want to say, who else was that? Who else we played down there? Oh, we played against Clifford Rozier in Florida in 1990.
Oh, yeah.
I got to tell you that story, too, when we played in Florida in my junior year. But like I said, my sophomore year, didn't get a lot of playing time, but I was able to learn from the older guys and really learn how to play basketball. So by the time my junior year coming, it would be a little bit better. But I'm trying to name some guys off. So we scrimmaged. We didn't play St. Anthony's until my senior year. That's when we played against Danny Hurley, who was, oh man, he could shoot the lights out, man.
Yeah, he could play.
Played against Roderick Rhodes. He played for the Houston Rockets. Who else?
I know Terry DeHare's name came up in the video that you showed me. Terry DeHare was somebody that they mentioned. And, you know, there's something else that they mentioned. They said that how you guys kind of found yourself as a team mid-season during that championship run. And I'm just curious, when was it when you guys realized that you could be a championship team? Like, what clicked for you guys if you're going through those struggles? Like, midway season, what clicked for you guys?
I think what happened was the beginning of my senior year, right? Because the year before that, my junior year, we lost to Grady in the semifinals. Grady was a tough team that year, that 1990 team. So when we came back, that year, that's when Norman Marbury graduated. He graduated in 1990. So I can remember the papers were saying, well, what is Lincoln going to do now? They don't have any Marberries on the team. How are they going to win a championship? They don't think we're going to win a championship. But we were already a tight-knit team, right? We had guys like James Cerisier, Chaka Shipp, who played at Seton Hall, and James Cerisier, who played at Bowling Green. We had Darryl Flicken, who was getting recruited by Temple. So we had Dennis Abelman, who was a solid point guard. I was coming off the bench. So we had some solid players. And we did have a good year, but I don't think anyone really expected us to really do anything that year, let alone win a championship. But I can remember all through the year, you know, how are these guys going to do it? How are they going to win a championship without any Marberries on the team? And I remember Robert Williams coming to me and saying to me, Sean, this year you guys are going to win a city championship. And I was just like, why would he say that? Because I'm going to be honest with you. We were hearing all these things, but us as a team, we wasn't really listening to it because we already knew what kind of team we were. And we already knew that because of the years prior. And again, like I said, we all played together in the street in Coney Island.
Yeah.
And so these guys are always there. The Bernard Mitchells, the Don Marberries, the Silk Owens, all these guys are still here to really help us along, to give us the confidence to say, yeah, we're good. I think coaching, Coach Harstein did a really good job in giving us that confidence as to say, look, this is the team we're going to go with, because this is what he was saying. This is what he was telling us. This is the team. This is the team that's going to do it. Now, remember, his last championship was 86. So how many years ago that was? So he was ready and primed, ready to win a city championship. But like I said, I can remember it being, you know, I think midway through the year, we were moving really fast. I think, you know, it was a lot of turnovers. And then Coach said, look, we got to slow it down. And the one game that really had us turn around was when we played St. Raymond's. Man, we played St. Raymond's in the Metro Classic, dude. Right? So we had to go over to Fairleigh Dickinson. This is when we played St. Anthony's, the second game. But the first, we had to get past St. Raymond's, who was ranked, I want to say, top five in the country. Ooh. Right?
Yeah.
But we didn't think nothing of it. Like, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not even going to lie to you. They had Terrence Renshaw, Orlando Antigua, Carl Brown, right? Yeah. And the one thing about Coach Harstein was the fact that Coach Harstein had one of the greatest scouting reports. You know why he's a good coach? Because he got some of the greatest scouting reports I've ever seen in my life. I mean, very detailed. You can't make no mistakes. It's right there.
Yeah.
He would sit you down and he would say, okay, Sean, who's your guy? And I would have to – you have to study the scouting report.
That's big right? time in high school, too, to do that in high school.
Right. Harstein – now, this was during late 80s, early 90s when I got there. Now, he could have been doing scouting reports way before that. But you see why Lincoln's winning, right? And I have friends of mine and my cousin also who played at Madison, Kadafi Alonso. He said, man, how did y'all know everything? And I still got the old scout reports. I said, here, they right here. Look, it's all right here. It tells you what the guys do and what they like to do, what they don't like to do. If they press, if they don't press, this guy's a scorer. He's not a scorer. This guy's a rebounder. He covered everything.
That's amazing.
And this is why Lincoln was one of the – and not only that, Zach, what he did was he also would have the second team play just like the team we were about to play.
Yeah.
So he would tell me, like, I would be on the second team and they had a guy that shot a lot. He would say, Sean, this is the play you would run and do that. So we would practice against their plays. So we knew what they were doing.
Yeah. And those are the fun practices too, where you get to act like one of the other team's star players, or you get to launch it every single time. Those are the fun practices right there.
Right. And let me tell you, and you can ask those guys, if you talk to any of the Lincoln players that played with me during them years, I got them guys kicked out of practice many a times because they could not stop me from scoring. So, you know, you're right. Those were fun times. And, you know, I wouldn't change none of that stuff in the world. But we found ourselves after we beat the hell out of St. Raymond's with Orlando Antigua and Terrence Renshaw. We locked them up and destroyed them. And, you know, everybody was like, well, how did you do that? How did you beat such a good team? I'm like, yo, they're really not that good, you know, to us, you know? So.
Well, especially when you know what's going on, right? Like, you know, I mean, we didn't have scouting reports like that at all in high school. So if you know what's going on, if you know people's tendencies, if you know who's scoring, who's rebounding, it kind of, you're kind of playing chess. And a lot of those are teams are playing checkers, if you think about it, you know, right. which is huge. Let me ask you this. I'm really curious. So you played a lot of blacktop, right? And then you play high school ball. When you're playing high school ball, are you still playing blacktop, or do you not have the time for blacktop anymore? Or do you not want to play blacktop anymore because of you're in that high school mindset of how to play basketball? I'm always curious about that.
No, I would never get away from the blacktop because that's where it all began.
Right.
Plus, living in Coney Island, ain't nothing to do. So you're not going to sit there and be like, oh, no, I'm not going to play basketball because it's on the blacktop. And no, you're going to be out there with your friends, with your buddies, playing on the blacktop. Now, remember, I don't know, Coney Island, we didn't have no gyms to go in. Not one. It was basically taking that shovel, shoveling that snow off the ground and shooting. We didn't have no inside gyms. We wasn't allowed to go to any gyms and play. You know what I'm saying? Which made it a little bit harder in Coney Island for guys that wanted to play basketball and stay out of trouble.
Right.
But I was out there on them blacktops, man. I did not, I was out there for them summer tournaments, you know, all over the city. I played with the Madison Broncos. I played with guys like Effin Whitehead, James Hector. You know, these guys were like, you know, Joey Brower from Sheepshead Bay, who's also, you know, we would just travel all around the city and play different guys on the court. But, you know, if you're a New York City player and you say you ain't playing on a blacktop no more, man, I don't know what city you're from. So,
you know, I have to ask you this before I ask you about, you know, your post high school stuff. But I mean, you played that championship game in Madison Square Garden. How cool is that? Because I mean, to be a Coney Island kid and then you play on Madison Square Garden's floor in the championship game, that's got to be a special moment.
Man, you know, that was my second time. Well, my third time. Remember, I played on the Felt Forum floor, and that's different because the floor drops and you in that small little place, you know, where they do the draft.
Right.
That's nice too. But let me tell you, when you walk out on that floor, man, and you just look up and it's like everything is looking down on you. That's like not a lot of people can say, look, I played on Madison Square Garden's floor.
Right. Yeah.
That's one of the greatest feelings that I got. It's, you know, my sophomore year, we played Madison High School there. It was just a regular season game. Coach Harstein that set that up. That's when my father was alive. And, you know, this is an emotional story because my father, you know, was there during that time. And I wanted him to, you know, he had passed away a year after that or that year. But he was able to see me play in Madison Square Garden. I'm going to tell you, man, I played terrible. I played terrible that game. But after the game, When I caught up with my father grabbed me and he hugged me. And I'm just like, you know, because in Coney Island, this is the thing in Coney Island. If you're not doing work, if you're not dropping numbers, if you're not doing these things, then you're a scrub. You're not that good. You know, that's the one thing I didn't like about Coney Island. You had to be dropping numbers. If you wasn't dropping numbers, they wasn't paying no attention to you.
Yeah.
Right? But my father looked at me, going back to my father, and he was so proud of me. And he was so happy. And I'm just like feeling bad because I play like trash. And he was so happy to see me. He was like, yo, it was so good to see. He was hugging me, kissing me, telling me how much he loved me. And that right there, man, was like, I can't even tell you how much that meant to me. But you know, those was one of the moments when I look back, you know, I felt so bad about not playing good, but he was so proud of me because he got to see me on the floor and coach put me in the game.
Yeah.
You know, and I was just so upset that I didn't, you know, do as much as I wanted to. But that's another thing that you had to battle with Coney Island, the fact that, you know, it wasn't about, now these days it's more about the intangible player, like a Dennis Rodman or a guy that will go out there and play defense. You know, me, I was a system guy. If coach told me to do what I, you know, hold this guy, that's what I'm doing. I'm not worried about scoring. I got Norman Marbury. I got Darryl Flicken. You know, although I may have wanted to score and I knew I could score, you know, I just, that wasn't my role. I had to play my role. So, you know, I started learning from them then that I knew I understood that I had to play a role. But playing in Madison Square Garden or playing in St. John's Alumni Hall or playing in any of those historic places in New York City, yeah, like, you can't get no better than that, man.
Well, I mean, especially at high school, that's special. I mean, we're from Reno, Nevada, so we don't really get anything like that. I mean, we get big high school gyms. We don't get to play in like a place like Madison Square Garden. I mean, that's a special thing. And I really appreciate you sharing that story about your dad. I mean, that's a very special thing. But you know what else is also special is the opportunity to go play college basketball. And you got to go play at Fulton Montgomery Community College. And I have to ask, because a lot of kids have a negative view on junior college. I think kids get caught up in going to the D1 rather than what's right for them and what's the right fit, both education and basketball wise. I know my JUCO team had like 9 kids go D1, so I know how cutthroat it is, but I know that you reached all-star status at the JUCO level for you. So what do you have to say to the kids who look down onto your schools, and how did JUCO prepare you for your success at the 4-year?
The JUCO prepared me because it was a smaller setting. College. When you talk about academics, you know, the student size, maybe, you know, 7 or 8 students to a class. So I think those things helped me, you know, a lot smaller setting, more that I can develop on in my game going to junior college. But I didn't have no choice because my grades weren't what it should have been. Right. So a lot of us had to go that route. Right. A lot of us, Darryl Flicken, myself, Norman Marbury. Back then, junior college back then was the option was, if you couldn't go to these Division I schools, you're going to a junior college.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And that was the mindset. My coach made sure that he took care of all his players, made sure that they had their college right, their financial aid stuff packed together. You know, our high school coach, before we even came to school in September, our coach set it up to where we would get the run of the classes in the beginning of, you know, in high school. So we was the first ones to register, because you know how it gets toward the end of it, everybody trying to register and all the classes are full. We was able to get there and get those classes. So my high school coach helped me develop me to be ready for college, especially on that level. He was good friends with Dan Jarvis, who was at the time the coach at Fulton Montgomery. And again, we got a lot of guys that went to junior college from Lincoln. You got Gregory Gums, who went to University of Buffalo through Fulton Montgomery. Darryl Mims, who went to Lincoln and then went to, I think he went to Northern Oklahoma at first, and then he came back to Fulton Montgomery, spent the year there, and then went to Seton Hall. Derek D. Flight Brown, who went to Fulton Montgomery, didn't do well at Fulton Montgomery academically. And then next thing you know, he was in California. And then a year later, he was at Providence.
Right.
Right. And nobody knows how that happened. And I said, and I told my coach, because at the time, Orapello, who was the coach, he said, "Wow, Sean, how did he get there?" I'm like, "You can't give up on no Coney Island kids." You know what I'm saying? And that's what you did when you were there. You gave up on this young man when he wanted to stay at this junior college. But I got to tell you that junior colleges in New York or in the East Coast, they ain't nothing like them junior colleges in the West Coast. Like you said, the whole lineup, most of the guys on your roster went Division I. That wasn't the case over here. You know, when you talk about a lot of the JUCOs in New York State, they're not on the level of a lot of the schools. So a lot of those schools, where they're going to send you to Division III schools.
Gotcha.
Right? And that's where I ended up going. You know, it was to a Division III school after Fulton Montgomery. But I got to say, Fulton Montgomery helped me learn how to manage my time, my work, and really helped me to teach me how to be a student academically. It kind of slowed me down by the time I got to my four-year school.
Yeah. And I mean, that's important stuff too. And I'm glad that you mentioned that about the junior college, because the West Coast junior colleges are really tough. Like, I remember the speed of the game was something that just wowed me. I walked into a two-year school thinking I was going to go D1 after a year, and boy, was I wrong. So, I mean, it's different, but I mean, the former Southern Vermont College was your next stop. And I mean, why Southern Vermont? Like, was there another choice? And what was your overall experience like there, other than probably being cold and being snowed in most nights?
Well, you're joking on me with that. But let me tell you, at first, I went to Buffalo State. And, you know, Buffalo State was really a big school. I didn't really know a lot of people. So by the end of that semester, I had transferred out. And I played in junior college. I played against a guy by the name of Richard Hurley, who used to coach at Troy High School. And, you know, he played at JCA. He was a great scorer. I had to hold him when I was at Fulton Montgomery. I held him to 14 points when he usually averages 36. But anyway, that's another story. But he recruited me. He said, "Sean, I want you to come to Southern Vermont." And, you know, he was kind of like a guy that I wanted to, like, get at him on the court. But I knew he was competitive. He was like, "Sean, you're going to have competitive basketball here." And at the time, I didn't want to sign with a Division III school. So I said, "Okay, no problem." I went to the school, and it was a really good experience. I played under Brian Fruscio, who is now the head coach at Albany Academy in Albany, New York, and that school produced, what's the kid's name from UConn? Jackson. He's from the Fruscio tree. I lost my train of thought, but, you know, Fruscio was a really good coach, and playing at Southern Vermont was a really good experience because, you know, he ran it as if it was a Division I program. You know, we had meetings, we had to check in, you know, he did a lot of things. And that year we won 19 games. But that year also we wasn't in a conference. We were kind of like floating.
Like independent league? Like the gotcha.
Yeah, during that year. That was a great experience for me. Actually, a guy that I played with, a guy by the name of Rafael Salazar, who played in the Dominican Republic, played with me. He's good friends with Carl Anthony Towns. So, and he's from New York also. He went to Kennedy High School in the Bronx. So I played with him at Southern Vermont College. And as you know, Southern Vermont College closed. A lot of these Division III schools closed because they don't have the funding or the money. But I got a really good experience going to the junior college route, although it wasn't the colleges that I really wanted. I wanted a higher level. But, you know, with my grades and, you know, me not doing what I'm supposed to be doing in class and in school, it brought me to that level, you know, of Fulton Montgomery and Southern Vermont College. So,
yeah, that's awesome stuff. And I mean, I know that I saw in your profile that you played some semi-pro ball. And I mean, we've heard some pretty fun and crazy stories from guys who played in the semi-pros. And I mean, we've heard about guys getting locked out of the gyms, getting traded for ball racks. I mean, weird travel experiences. You got to have some good stories about playing semi-pro. Like, what's the craziest experience that you had playing semi-pro?
One crazy experience is when I played for the EBA, Eastern Basketball Alliance, and I played for a guy by the name of Tom McAndrews, who also coached with Don Nelson way, way back in the day. And, you know, God bless him, Tom McAndrews. He was a good man, really looked out for a lot of the players during that time when we played in the EBA. But we played a Philadelphia team. And on that Philadelphia team was Wayne Womack, who played for University of Arizona. So I'm like, wow, you know, I'm playing against somebody that played on a high level.
Right.
So, you know, I'm like, let me go test him. Right. So I walk up to him and I give him an elbow. And he like, young fella, you need to watch it now. And I'm like, what you talking? You know, I'm from Coney Island. What you talking about? Blah, 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 blah. Right. So I come down the next play. I'm like, yeah, I'm coming at him. Right. I'm coming at him. And he's standing in front of me. So I goes to jump over him. Right.
Right.
Ball. The ball goes out of my hand. Right. Hits the rim. He catches me in the air. He said, I got you, young fella. And brought me down. I'm like, whoa, you know what I'm saying? I'm like, this dude is strong. Like,
yeah.
But nah, that was a really good experience, man. I played against Luis Arosa, who played at St. Peter's, Andrew Kovasowski, who played at Rutgers.
Yeah.
So like I said, man, I had fun doing that also. I actually gave up my last year of eligibility of college to do that. But then at that point, you know, other guys was coming in, started playing more guys than me. So then he looked at me. He said, Sean, you want to join me on the bench coaching? So I said, all right. You know, I ain't getting no playing time. At least I can still stay around the game. Yeah, of course. So I started helping him coach nice. During that year. And, you know, that brought me into the coaching circle, you know. So that's how that started.
And then it looks like you're trying to bring the ABA back to Vermont. Is that correct?
I'm not trying. I did already.
There you go. There you go.
Nice. Perfect.
Yeah, I have a team called the Bennington Martins. You know, in this state, there's a lot of things that goes on. It's a lot of racism, a lot of stuff, you know, because, you know, it's not a lot of people of color up here. But, you know, as you know, time moves on, they're getting a little bit better. I now serve on the Criminal Justice Council in the state of Vermont, which is a big, huge deal. My fiance is the president of the NAACP chapter in Rutland, Vermont. And, you know, we're trying to do a lot of different things here in Vermont to try to make it better for people of color, try to make it a lot more welcoming. But bringing a team here was probably one of the best things that could have been done because it's not a lot to do. I got a lot of support from the select board, town of Bennington. And just a lot of people, you know, it was a really good, successful year last year. We played over 20 games. We made the play-in tournament game. We played guys by the like of Tom Garrett Jr. I don't know if you know Tom Garrett. Tom Garrett went to University of Rhode Island and then played for the Clippers. He also played with Carlton Owens at University of Rhode Island. So we played against his son. Who played for the Providence Pirates. But I would have to say the ABA, although it's kind of in a funny, funky place right now, it's a lot more teams in the Northeast. It's at least 17 or 18, well, maybe more than that. I want to say 20-something teams in the Northeast with more coming. And, you know, I have to be honest, a lot of these colleges – they're either closing or a lot of guys are not eligible. So that pushes them out. So now what are those guys going to do? Right?
Right.
They just fall by the wayside? No. We pick them up. And for me, I do more of a mentorship thing with them. Also teaching them and helping them how to conduct themselves on the basketball court. Because a lot of these guys think just because they drop in numbers and they're good, that they can play pro basketball. No. You have to market and brand yourself. which means your social media can't be all crazy with a bunch of stuff on there. You have to be respectful in the presence of other people. So we're not only teaching basketball, but we're teaching life stuff to a lot of these guys. Because a lot of my guys are from Albany, Schenectady, you know, Newburgh, New York, Poughkeepsie, New York, all of those areas. And like I said earlier, we got to understand, like, New York basketball ain't what it used to be. It may not ever get back to what it used to be. You know what I mean? Because we don't have a lot of the stuff over in the West Coast, like you guys over there have. You know, the coaches, it's warm out. You know, you ain't got to worry about weather. You know, because I asked one of the owners over in the West Coast that played for the Nova Stars. I was like, why are there no scouts out in the East Coast? He was like, why would they want to come out there? You know, yeah. If they come, it's got to be for something that's a product that's really good. Not that they're just coming out there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, the West Coast is better because it's warm, it's hot, it's easier to move around. You know, so it's just, you got a lot of these things working against you in New York City. Like I said, there's a bias in terms of, you know, if you're not doing work, if you're not averaging 20-something points, you know, they're not going to notice you or recognize you. And I think that was a problem back then with a lot of us. You know, everybody was rushing to get 10 points to be in the paper. Because if you score 10 points, they put your name in the paper, right?
Right.
Like, we clout chase. Like, we want that. And everybody was, you know, back then, you know, wanting to get that spot or get that area. So.
No, it's a great point. And I'm a firm believer that there's not enough options for players besides going overseas to continue their career. So I'm glad that you're doing what you're doing, because I think that's super important to have, you know, kids having opportunities. You still want to play ball. You still want to play ball at a high level. Well, here's another league where you don't have to travel overseas to do it. And maybe that sets you up to be able to play overseas, or maybe that sets you up to get into a summer league, or maybe that sets you up, you know, it's just having more options. And I think that's super important. And I'm also glad that you talk about, you know, getting their minds right, education, you know, those type of things, because that stuff is super important. That, you know, unfortunately, you're one bad knee injury away from your career being over. And if you're not paying attention to the school side of it, or if you only play for a couple of years, like, you're not retiring on playing it for a couple of years. You got to have that education background so you can decide what you want to go into after. I want to do a quick lightning round with you. Zach's going to ask the questions. It's just a couple of one or two word answers to some questions that Zach's got. Zach, are you ready to ask the questions?
I am. And when you played New York City, nicknames are important. Did you have a nickname?
I did not. One of my homeboys named Bill Dees, his son went to LaSalle. His name was Isaiah Dees. He basically called me the Chief. I don't know why. I just went with it. But, bro, I'm going to tell you, Zach, ain't no nickname stuck with me. You know what I'm saying? No, I'm practicing. That's it. But he was one of the guys that gave me that name. I don't know why he did. But you know, in New York, man, when they make a name for you, it sticks. Like, it just sticks, man. It's especially in Coney Island. Yeah. And the person that would give all these names out a lot of time was Norman Marbury. He would come with all these different names to call people. You know, he was one of my funniest teammates, man, to be around. Plus, he was ferocious on the court. Norman Marbury, I tell you, man, when he dunked it on that kid from New Utrecht, I was trying to look for that the picture to show you. Bro, he had the ball cuffed in his hand, and the guy's head was under the ball, and the rim was right by his head. No lie.
Oh my God.
I'm not even going to lie to you, man. You want to talk about that, like, I got a call in the middle of the night saying that Stephon's dunking backwards off the alley-oop.
Yeah.
I said, how? He's 5'11".
Yeah.
He's like, I'm telling you, bro, he's destroying this right now. First year at high school. First year, Stephon's. His first year.
Yeah.
That's when I knew. I can remember one day I was on the court shooting. He comes out there. He had to be 12 or 11. Zach, no lie, this will tell you his IQ at a young age. He was talking to me about the pressures of the media at 11 years old and how that can damage you. So for some reason, he was already ready for that.
Yeah.
At 11 years old. So his family was already schooling him about these things, his brothers and them. Again, I didn't have the luxury to be around them a lot of times, although they were right in the building right next to me. Yeah. Right? You just didn't have that privilege a lot of times to be around those guys because they were more family oriented.
Yeah.
You know, the only time they were outside was when they was ready to bust you up on the court. And let me tell you, Stephon would hunt, he would, all right. To be honest, right? You seen Friday, right? You seen when Debo came, what everybody was doing. Right?
Yep.
Putting their stuff away. Same thing with Stephon. When he come outside with that basketball in his hand, looking for people. Everybody was running away, running. Right?
Yeah, I believe that.
He told me, he said, Sean, come on, play me one-on-one. I said, man, you're a little, come on, let's go. Yo, man. He was manhandling me. He was only a sophomore in high school. I'm about to go in. I quit. He was body. If you were to ever talk to him, if he remembers this, he could tell you, I quit. I said, yo, bro, you're destroying me because you're too physical, you're too strong. Even at that young age, man.
Yeah.
He wanted to test his strength against the bigger dudes.
Yeah.
So he was like Debo. He was hunting in the neighborhood. And when you seen him, you went the other way. Go ahead.
I'm not even lying to you.
I was scared of
it. Yeah, the Marberries are just built different. And this is going to be a fun one because there's a lot of history with New York. So my next lightning round question, you just mentioned Marbury. Do you have a New York City starting five? Do you have a NYC starting five? I mean, it's a loaded one. It's a tough one, but you got to have a starting five.
God, you going to put me in that one? All right. Stephon, right? Okay. Stephon. Kenny Anderson.
Yep.
Okay. God bless him. Conrad McCray. Whoever don't say Conrad, they crazy.
Yeah.
I remember when Conrad came to Lincoln, we played him in the scrimmage. It was a loose ball on the floor. He was right under the basket. He pushes everybody out the way, grabs the ball, and goes straight up and dunks.
He was a beast. He was strong. He's strong as hell. I've heard stories about Conrad for sure.
Yeah, so you got Conrad. Wow, who else? Ephraim Whitehead was one of my favorite players, although I know there's probably a lot of other guards, but Ephraim Whitehead, I don't know if you know Ephraim. He went to Duquesne. Duquesne University played at Grady.
Yep.
And I want to say Stanley King.
Okay.
Oh, not Stanley King. I want to say Charnell Scott from All Hallows.
Okay. That's a good – hey, that's a tough starting five right there. That's big time tough. Yeah. I'm not talking about who ended up being the best player or college player in the NBA, the best player to wear a Lincoln jersey that you ever saw.
They got to be Stephon.
Okay.
And the Marbury family. I mean, I see Juju do some pretty spectacular stuff, man. But because Stephon was able to take that jump, I would have to say Stephon Marbury is probably one of, if not, he is the greatest player that Lincoln has ever seen.
Yeah. If we hear Marbury stories all the time through AAU, that answer does not surprise me at all. And my final question, I might know the answer to this. You might have talked about this, but I ask everybody this one. What's your favorite basketball memory if you had to pick just one?
My favorite basketball memory was winning the city championship.
Yeah, I thought that might be the one.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I'm just like, when them people – and I don't know if you see me at the end, I'm just like, the people, yep, They just like just like trying to get the camera was right on me. I don't know why, but it was just. Then my homeboy came and grabbed me, hugged me, was like, ah, right? And I was just like, wow, you know? So I want to say the city championship game. And, you know, I was really proud of the way my friend, my best friend, James Cerisier played. He got the MVP. He outplayed. We were supposed to play Grady, but they lost to South Shore. And we just, because... You know, Hartstein was a smart guy. We had scrimmaged South Shore twice and played them in a regular season game. So we had three games against them where we were able to scout them perfectly, and we had them pegged out, man. We had them when Coach said we had to slow up the ball more, which none of us wanted to do, but it really worked because now I got guys telling me, asking me, wow, Sean, how did your coach make y'all move the ball that way? Yeah. Well, because if we didn't, we was gonna sit down. So we had to. So, but
absolutely, yeah. Absolutely, man. I mean, it's such a great, you know, it's having a memory like that of winning the city championship, especially, you know, where you grew up. That's huge. It's something you can take with you for the rest of your life for sure. And those memories have got to be just so. So right up front in your brain, you know, to be really honest with you, it's just an amazing opportunity to have that. And it's just great. And speaking of that, it was awesome talking to you today. A lot of great stories. You know, you give us a lot of knowledge, you know, a lot of New York City basketball stories. I'm a Jersey guy. I love hearing New York stuff. I mean, it just makes me happy. And really, really glad we had you on today. Thanks for being so generous with your time. Zach, is there anything you want to add before we let Sean out of here?
I just want to say thanks, man. This is truly a fun one for us. Anytime we can get some New York City basketball stories, we're always in. And it's just nice to have another Coney Island guy on. You know, Zach Marbury's our last one, but this was a fun one. So it was an honor to have you. So we just really appreciate everything that you gave us today.
Thank you. Yeah, and I'm so proud of Zachy because, we used to call him the maniac. You know, Zach the maniac, but he has come a long way. I can remember he was a kid that was just running around. He just had Matchbox cars in his mouth. He just wasn't into basketball. He was the maniac. He was running around, but I want to say that he's become he ended up being a really good young man. He went to the University of Rhode Island. You know, I felt he should have had more of a chance, you know, but, you know, he was a guy that also I made sure back in the day, like if I had some shorts, I would say, here, Zach, I got a pair of shorts here, take these shorts. So, you know, the Marbury family, man, you just never know. I can remember Stephon coming into practice one time with a pair of Minnesota Timberwolves shorts on, like authentic Minnesota Timberwolves shorts on. And I'm like, where you get them shorts from? He was like, I got them from Tony Campbell. So I'm here to tell y'all, he already knew these people.
Yeah. TC before, was tough, too. TC was tough.
He had his shorts. I'm like, how you get his shorts?
And probably played them for him.
Not even knowing years later, he's going to get drafted by that team.
Yeah.
Right.
It was just weird. And you seen him sitting there next to his brother. His brother's telling him, this is what you do. This is... teaching them to, you know, that's what they was doing all the time, making sure that they let their brothers know, and this is what you're doing. Like Juju had a really good tournament down in Florida when we played against Flint Hill Prep. Now, Flint Hill Prep had the likes of Corey Alexander, Randolph Childress. You remember Serge Swicker that went to North Carolina?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Big seven-footer, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Danny Graves, they were all Street and Smith's All-American. And I remember they was doing the lineup. We was in a championship game because when we first got there, they was calling us names. They were saying, oh, here come the Jackson 5 because we had the old funky uniforms with the bell bottoms. They was laughing at us. I'm going to tell you, we went in there, we beat every team. We went in there, we beat Miami Carroll City, who had Charles Claxton, right? His son now, Nick Claxton, plays for the New Jersey Nets.
I didn't realize that was his son. Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, yeah. No, I'm – yeah, yeah. So, Yeah, thank you. Yeah, Charles Claxton is his, no, Nicholas Claxton is his son because they both went to the University of Georgia. But we beat them by 15. Oh, wow. They had those two big men. Then we played Clifford Rozier's team, Bradenton Southeast. And we beat them. I think Juju had like 38 with like four alley-oop passes for dunks. And then that's we played Randolph Childress and them in a championship game and lost. But that was a really good time too, you know, playing against those guys. They were tough. Randolph Childress was tough, man. You probably remember.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I remember him. Portland and Wake Forest for sure.
Just imagine him and Norman Marbury going at it. I wish I had that footage.
If only we had social media back then.
Well, hey, Sean, thanks again for being on the show, man. Really do appreciate it, my friend. A lot of great stuff today.
Hey, guys, what y'all doing is great. Thank you for having me. I'm appreciative of all of this stuff that you guys are doing. You know, just let me know. I got, you know, there's other people that definitely will want to come on here and talk. And I just want to push the name of Coney Island because we don't have a lot of stories out there, you know, to be told. So thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Awesome. Have a wonderful day, my friend.
Have a good day. Thank you.
What a great episode. Learned a lot about New York City basketball today from Sean. I mean, it's, you know, it's kind of funny. He has good points about, you know, like the West Coast nowadays and whatnot, but man, the 80s New York basketball scene, you know, I mean, there's so much of that in the papers in New York. I mean, you know, like big time too. And you got, you know, you got the Knicks, you got the Jets, you got the Yankees, you got the Mets, you got all these big pro teams, and you've got high school basketball in those papers also, which is a testament to how great that scene was and how many players came out, played D1, played in the pros. I mean, the list goes on. You can spend hours talking about that scene back in the 80s, early 90s for sure.
Yeah, I just love how passionate New York City basketball players are about their city, about the game, and also just about what they learn from the game and apply it to life. Like every single guest that we have from New York City is the same way. Like Ricky Sobers is the same, Zach Marbury, now Sean Pratt. So it's always fun to have them on, and also learning about the Marberries. I mean, that whole family is just one step ahead, a few steps ahead of everybody else when it came to both basketball, the business, and, you know, everything that comes with it. So, I mean, that's always interesting to hear. So a lot of good stuff today. I really appreciate Sean.
Oh, absolutely. And I appreciate you guys for listening to the show and taking care of us on social media. There's so much great stuff that's been happening. We got a lot more guests in the can. Can't wait to release some more episodes. It's been a wild ride, man. It's been a lot of good stuff going on, charting in some country still. We haven't left the charts in a couple of them, which is insane. So it's wonderful to see the support. So thank you guys for doing that stuff. Zach, is there anything you want to add before we get out of here?
Just a big thanks to Sean Pratt. Just really appreciate him reaching out, sharing his stories. A lot of good stuff today. And I just hope that we can get some more Coney Island guys. But like you said, there's just too many stories out there that haven't been heard. So hopefully we can get some more Coney Island guys out there.
Yeah, that would be great. Absolutely. Especially Stefan, if he's not too busy in China. That'd be...
Yeah, Starberry. Hit us up, Starberry.
Yeah, please do, man. We'd love to talk to you, man. I'm a big fan. Big Knicks fan. Big fan of yours. So, yeah, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening to the show. Be good to each other. Be good to yourselves. And be safe out there. Peace.